a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Guan Xing, the headlines we're tracking at this hour. Business expansion, China's efforts to foster a favorable business environment and expand investment opportunities, attract foreign investments and enterprises. Unfair curbs, the United States implements tighter regulations on semiconductor exports to China. We examine the impact of the measures. And flying high, China's low-altitude economy exceeded 500 billion yuan in 2023. We take you to Anhui to find out how low-altitude economy is growing in the province. Eastern China's Jiangsu province has vowed to push forward prosperous, beautiful, and culturally advanced modernization. Xu Kunling, Deputy Secretary of the CPC Jiangsu Provincial Committee and Governor of Jiangsu Province, was speaking at a news conference this morning. Xu said Jiangsu will consolidate and strengthen the momentum of economic recovery and build itself as key frontier for new quality productive forces. The province also looks to further develop as a globally competitive base for advanced manufacturing and push ahead with high-level opening up. Chinese Commerce Minister Wang Wentao recently held meetings with more than 20 CEOs of multinational companies, including executives from Apple, Qualcomm and Mercedes-Benz. And these meetings proved fruitful, reaffirming China's commitment to fostering a favorable business environment and expanding investment opportunities for multinational corporations within the country. In data from the ministry reviewed, an increase of nearly 35% in the number of newly established companies with foreign shareholdings during the first 2 months of this year. Official updates of China's 24 measures for attracting foreign direct investment have been released after their announcement 6 months ago. And these updates include extensions of tax breaks for foreign employees, incentives for domestic R&D equipment purchases, and enhancements in foreign executive travel procedures. During the China Development Forum and the Boao Forum for Asia meetings, several international business leaders expressed their confidence in China's economic prospects and its potential for synergistic growth with the rest of the world. Listening.
The action plan, the 24 measures are very welcome. They're very welcome first as a general signal that China is open for business, China is open for foreign investment, for foreign companies operating in China. It's a big market. The measures themselves are very meaningful. It's beneficial for the Chinese market because it means more competition, more creativity.
One of the things about the China model is that they've always found a way to grow. It's no longer real estate, but consumers are getting more active. Initiatives like Belt and Road, there has been a lot of creativity, a lot of business innovation. So growing 5% on a market this size is a tremendous accomplishment. And I think China can continue.
Australia's relationship with China is largely an economic relationship. You know, we export a lot of iron ore in particular and high quality food to China, but we also export a number of high quality services. And I think there's a very good synergy between Australia's very specialised skills in some areas, whether it's healthcare, medical care, environmental remediation work, and things of that nature, that can complement and work and support China's growth strategies.
What makes for a good business environment for foreign firms? Yang Chenxi explores this issue from Beijing.
Foreign companies are an important part of the Chinese capital's economy, as seen in this area in southeast Beijing.
This is the Beijing Economic Technological Development Area. About 90,000 companies from China and abroad have set up operations here. Of these, 102 are global Fortune 500 firms.
We occupy 0.35% of the land in Beijing and contribute 30% of the city's industrial added value. Foreign-funded enterprises contribute 70% of our output.
Special focus is on high-tech. Many Chinese companies delving into autonomous driving hold test rides in this area. The Japanese equipment maker SMC produces spare parts for automation machines here. The area wants more global high-tech firms to set up shop.
We established a dedicated working group for foreign enterprises last year. We can provide a maximum reward of 100 million RMB to enterprises that settle here, including services for talent recruitment and market development.
Policies to help foreign firms get accustomed to and integrated into the local market are key to this endeavor, said Professor Mark Greven from the International Institute for Management Development.
Enabling them, for instance, to build innovation centers, to connect to consumers, to understand how customers work here, to build those ecosystems with other local partners, whether it's universities or local companies, I think is really, really important.
He and his colleagues at the Swiss-based business school regularly write case studies on China's industries, identifying future opportunities.
Companies in China are transforming. We're looking for what is that next growth engine? What's that next big S-curve to jump on?
Growth of China's industries, many officials say, hinges on providing a leveled playing field for domestic and foreign companies alike. Yang Chengxi, CGTN, Beijing.
Now, for more insights on China's recently issued guidelines to optimize foreign investment, we're joined by Wang Yaojing, Assistant Professor of Economics at Peking University. Thank you for joining us, Professor Wang. So what economic effects can be anticipated in China and global manufacturing industry following the complete removal of foreign investment restrictions in the manufacturing sector?
Well, thank you for having me. So the full lifting of foreign investment restrictions in China's manufacturing sector is anticipated to have profound effects on both the country's economy and the global manufacturing landscape. By welcoming foreign investment, China will gain access to a broader pool of expertise, technology, and capital. And we will also expect to see more collaborations in digital transformation, which will revolutionize manufacturing and driving competitiveness. And we also will see collaborations with foreign enterprises that will accelerate China's transition to green and low carbon manufacturing. So overall, the lifting of foreign investment restrictions presents opportunities for China to achieve technological advance, competitiveness, and sustainability.
And what in the 24 action plan do you think can be effectively facilitating market entry for foreign investors?
Well, firstly, there is a commitment to expand market access by revisiting the negative list for foreign investment. So we are seeing that they are initiating trial market access in sectors of interest to foreign enterprises such as the healthcare and telecommunications. And secondly, the plan emphasizes attracting foreign investment in innovative sectors with a focus in high-tech industries like advanced manufacturing and environmental protection. So furthermore, measures to enhance access for foreign financial institutions include areas like bank card clearing services and expanding their involvement in China's insurance services and bond market. So overall, the action plan gives a clear instructions to the government and a roadmap to foreign investors on where the opportunities are to invest in China.
And with China's expansive market size and increasing consumer demand, what opportunities and challenges do foreign companies encounter in this business environment?
Well, like you said, China's vast market size and growing consumer demand is a huge opportunity for foreign investors. And let's not forget China's emphasis on technological innovation that presents opportunities for foreign companies, particularly in sectors such as advanced manufacturing, biotechnology, and digital services. And traditionally, foreign investment would expect regulatory hurdles to be the biggest challenge to conduct business activities in China. Now, with the policy and the action plan showing strong determination from the government to overcome such hurdle, I would think that what's remaining is just the level of competitiveness that foreign companies might need to face in the Chinese market and their needs to differentiate themselves and adapt to the local consumer preferences to succeed.
Well, thank you very much for sharing with us, Professor Wang Yaojing from Peking University.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global Business. Only on CGTN.
Welcome back. China has expressed criticism regarding the recent tightening of U.S. regulations on semiconductor exports, asserting that these measures pose additional obstacles to trade within the chip industry. The Biden administration recently revised rules with the aim of limiting China's access to U.S. artificial intelligence chips and chip-making tools as part of broader efforts to address national security concerns related to Beijing. In response, China's Commerce Ministry emphasized that this move significantly impacts the mutually beneficial cooperation between Chinese and foreign enterprises. Additionally, the ministry states its willingness to collaborate with all parties involved to enhance the stability of the global semiconductor industry. In 2023, global semiconductor sales experienced an 8.2% decline, primarily due to weakening demand, a high base, and trade protectionist policies implemented by certain countries. China led this decline, with sales dropping by 14% last year, as reported by the Semiconductor Industry Association, a U.S. trade body. Notably, Europe was the only market that maintained continued growth. Despite the decline, China retained its position as the largest semiconductor market in 2023, with sales reaching $150 billion, accounting for nearly one-third of the global total, according to data from Statista. However, China still has room for improvement in terms of research and development. The SIA 2022 report highlighted that China's R&D expenditure to sales ratio in the semiconductor industry lags behind other traditional powerhouses. More discussions on how the latest U.S. curbs on semiconductor exports will affect the industry. I want to bring Andy Mok, a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. Thank you for joining us, Andy. So how could the revised U.S. export control order on semiconductors to China impact the global supply chain and industry dynamics?
Well, thanks for having me on today, Guanxing. I think that this brings to mind a famous tech industry acronym, FUD, F-U-D. And this is the impact it's going to have on the global semiconductor supply chain. It's going to increase fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And this is going to be very bad for the industry because, like any business or any industry, confidence is vitally important. And especially in semiconductors, where enormous investments are required to develop the next generation of technology. So anything that increases the FUD factor, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, is going to be bad for the industry. It also is going to create enormous uncertainty for many countries around the world as well that feel caught in the middle. The Netherlands is a case in point. Obviously, the lithography machines that are made by ASML are a vital part of the semiconductor supply chain. And this is going to make it more difficult for companies and countries to advance what is an increasingly vital technology to everything we do in every sphere of human activity.
Andy, what has been the reaction from American businesses and trade organizations regarding the new semiconductor export controls?
Well, I think what we're seeing is an increasing divergence between the official U.S. government stance towards China, which in and of itself I think is quite contradictory, because on the one hand, the government wants to increase, improve relations with China. At the same time, it is taking these measures to damage the relationship, perhaps in very serious ways. But what we're seeing with American business is that they're voting with their feet. Look at the recent China Development Forum. The largest contingent of business executives came from the United States, including from the semiconductor industry. So I think this shows a certain defiance by American businesses, and they're demonstrating that they don't necessarily agree with this aspect of American policy towards China.
And what are the implications of the export control order for technological development and competition between U.S. and China?
Well, I think this is a big question mark at this point. So certainly the original sanctions policies against China in semiconductors were very significant, and I think it caused China to increase its efforts to reduce reliance on American companies and American technologies. The big question mark here is this. About a week or two ago, I met with a former senior executive from OpenAI, and we were discussing the future of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And many experts believe that AI is going to move to the device, whether that's a computer, a smartphone, versus live in an app on your phone or your computer. So part of the restrictions that were just announced cover laptop AI chips. So this, again, I think is a very direct challenge and a signaling of intent that the U.S. is looking to suppress China in the technology arena, irrespective of the other rhetoric we're hearing of working to cooperate with China. So I think this is a big question mark at this point.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for your analysis. And that was Andy Mark, a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization for us.
Here on BizTalk, we connect the dots, shedding light on the real stories behind the economic landscape. To better understand China's dynamism and the economies and rhythms of business, propelling new drivers of growth.
China.
BizTalk, your window into China and the global economy. Only on BizTalk.
A delegation from Kazakhstan visited Chengdu in southwest Sichuan province. At the investment forum held last Friday, the regional advisor highlighted an expanding investment future between the two regions. Take a listen.
One of the primary goals of our visit to Chengdu is to engage with local enterprises in Sichuan with investment opportunities in Almaty region of Kazakhstan. We see great potential in China's Belt and Road Initiative, which offers a conducive business environment for Kazakhstan and other countries under the framework. It's also important to cooperate on adopting the next generation technologies. In the future, we hope to include Sichuan in the roster direct flights to Almaty alongside major cities like Shanghai.
China's low-attitude economy surpassed 500 billion yuan in 2023, according to a report published by CCID Consulting on Monday. The report said that China's electric vehicle takeoff and landing aircraft industry generated nearly 1 billion
yuan in revenue last year. Feeling thirsty while walking in the park? Wave your hand at this cute little car and it will stop for you, so that you can choose from the drinks inside. This is just one of the various unmanned applications used in this park in East China's Anhui province.
This place used to be an airport, and over there is the old terminal building. And after it was abandoned, it was renovated into a city park. In fact, this is the world's largest city park, four times the size of the Central Park in New York.
Unmanned vending cars, unmanned touring buses. This is the country's first demonstration project of all space unmanned applications, from the Earth to the skies.
On this vast airspace above Luogang Park, we carry out various experimental projects. We want to show everyone what our transportation system would look like in the future and how life would become.
This aircraft is known as Electric Vertical Takeoff and Landing Aircraft, or eVTOL, but it has a simpler name, Air Taxi. It flies at a much lower altitude than the traditional aircraft does. The company has become the first one in China to receive industry approval for fully autonomous passenger-carrying air taxis.
At present, this equipment is used for tourism, urban air traffic, emergency rescue and logistics, and firefighting in tall buildings. The core technology is that the vehicle is unmanned.
In December 2023, the vehicles have successfully completed debut commercial flight demonstrations in Guangzhou and Hefei, respectively. That means the vehicle can start normal flights for aerial sightseeing and local scenic spots. This is the first step towards the future of hailing taxis in the sky. Developing low-altitude economy has been written into China's government work report this year as the country maps out future industries for high-quality productivity. Anhui Province has led the development in this sector with over 300 companies already in its fold. The government said the scale of low-altitude economy in this province has exceeded 40 billion yuan, or about 5.5 billion U.S. dollars in 2023. And that is just the beginning.
We have designated 54 low-altitude pilot airspaces and opened 43 low-altitude routes. In 2023, the province had nearly 9,700 hours of general aviation flights and 1.44 million hours of drone flights.
China on March 27th issued an action plan to promote the innovation of general-purpose aircraft equipment. Unmanned drones are expected to be used commercially in various sectors, including urban air transport, logistics, and emergency rescue by 2027. Wu Bin, CGTN, Hefei, Anhui Province.
They've long been a staple of science fiction movies, but it now looks like flying cars could soon be a reality. A Chinese company has bought the exclusive rights to mass produce a vehicle known as the air car for use in China itself. Our correspondent Rahul Pathak has more.
Ask most people about their vision of the future, the words flying cars are one of the first things that come to mind. Films from the silent classic Metropolis to more contemporary blockbusters like Back to the Future and Blade Runner have often used the trope of airborne vehicles to give us a snapshot of a more technologically advanced world. That world came a step closer with the news that China's Huibei Xianxin flying car technology company has signed a deal to produce and distribute the air car, which was originally developed by Slovakian firm Klein Vision. Experts say the news is significant, but airborne traffic jams probably a few years away yet.
The rules that are going to be applied to all this new technology are very similar to the small private aircraft that I mentioned before. It's called general aviation. And it sounds a bit hair-raising when I say they're actually about 100 times less safe than conventional airliners. But in fact, even then, they're about the same level of safety as taking a taxi ride or something like that.
The aircar first took to the skies back in 2021, with this prototype completing a 35-minute test flight. The car itself runs on petrol and takes just over 2 minutes to transform from a road vehicle into an aircraft. Weighing in at 1,000 kilograms, the two-seater has a top speed of 160 kilometers per hour and can fly at a maximum altitude of nearly 2,500 meters. The news that a Chinese company is moving ahead with mass production has led many to suggest that the country could steal a march on its rivals and become a market leader in airborne transport.
The Chinese have got the money and the political will to keep going and make these huge investments to actually make this happen. So, and I think they recognise that this is one of their strengths, that effectively, because it's such a new technology, it's like a big leveller for everybody. So the former advantage that all the Western companies have got probably isn't there so much like it used to be.
Vehicles based on the air car design will now be manufactured by the Huibei Xianxin company, and the firm says it will be sold for use within a specific geographical region of China, which has yet to be disclosed. Rahul Pathak, CGTN.
China has long been one of the biggest markets for bicycles in the world, and now cycling is increasingly seen as not just a means of transport, but also a sport. What began as a niche sport about a decade ago has turned into a booming industry, and Le Shuran has more.
From wheels, to handlebar, to pedals, it's almost a monthly routine for cycling enthusiasts like Gao Yiyang to spend several hundred yuan on replacing worn parts with new ones. Pedaling himself forward gives him a pleasure not to be gotten from other sports, Gao says. And over the past few years, there have been more people who feel the same.
I have been riding bikes for over 20 years. I ride a lot less right now, but still I try to squeeze as much time as possible to nearby cities like Suzhou, Hangzhou, just to ride bikes. I really witness the growth of the communities. I'm happy to see like more people join in the community and take up biking as a hobby or as a sport.
All around the country, especially in major urban centers such as Beijing, Shanghai, and Hangzhou, bikes are no longer defined just as tools for daily commutes for people like Gao. And many city clubs are emerging now to gather cyclists together. Those connections are formed not just at brick-and-mortar shops, but also online communities.
We hold cycling events every weekend. Usually an event attracts 20 to 50 people, much more than before. Through promotion on social media platforms, more people now understand what cycling is. They can imagine the feeling they can get and the scene they can see. We share our roots and experiences on Little Red Book, WeChat and Weibo, which really brings us more newcomers.
Dai says the boom in cycling also reflects the public's growing pursuit of a healthy lifestyle. Naturally, the trend has boosted the demand for bicycles. Many bicycle stores like this one in downtown Shanghai see sales pick up. And going cycling is not that expensive.
We receive more younger customers. Usually, they come to buy new equipment once a year. As for bikes, they are more long-lasting. Some beginner bikes only cost you around 5,000 yuan. And you will be able to fully understand what cycling is.
People will have more choices for sports, but Yang says he expects cycling to remain popular. Many of his customers now also design their own riding clothes and buy different colored gear for their bikes. It's also a way to show who they are. Lei Shuran, ICS for CGTN, Shanghai.
And that will do for this edition of Global Business on CGTN. I'm Guan Xing in Beijing. Thanks for being with us. Stay tuned.